the talk of the town.
Good afternoon, Milwaukee, and welcome to a Monday edition of the Evening Rush. It is, in fact, a glorious day. The weather is unbelievable. And I've got a surprise guest in the studio. That's not a surprise to me, but he's a surprise to you all. And you were out of business for a little while, and now that you're back, let's see if people can recognize that voice.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen.
Name that tune. I wonder if they know what that voice is. How you doing, Sheriff Clark?
Welcome to WMCS, the talk of the town.
Well, I got to worry about him now. You know, there are some times when I'm away from here, and we need to check your schedule and see. Certainly, you'd be great at this.
Love to. You know,
and you're serious too, aren't you?
Darn right I am.
Well, we will. We see what we can do to make that happen. I'm going to do everything within my power to make that happen. But the only thing is, you know, your politics and my politics, a little bit east and west.
There's nothing wrong with that.
It doesn't always have to be political, right?
As Bill Russell, the great center for the Boston Celtics, said, you know, if everybody is thinking the same thing, is anybody really thinking? So. Yeah.
You know, Bill Russell, let's see, I can't remember the last time Bill Russell was quoted in this studio, probably long before I was ever here. Bill Russell always says some great things. I mean, he was really, I think people didn't spend enough time paying attention to what was coming out of his mouth because he was such a great basketball player.
He's a real interesting individual. Had several books out, but one I read several years ago had to do with the 11, I think it was called the 11 Leadership Tenets of Bill Russell. Fascinating individual, well thought out, deep individual, and I'll tell you what he went through, you know, at the time, if you think about it, what he was able to overcome and had to deal with, you know, playing for the Boston Celtics back in the late 50s and early 60s, if anybody's familiar with the Boston area and what it was like and what it had to be. But he endured. I think they won 11.
They won 11. Yeah, they did.
Something like that. And it's a fascinating story. I admire him a lot. Learned from him and will continue to do so.
Well, you know, he went through a similar kind of situation that Jackie Robinson went through, only he went through it on the basketball court.
Right.
But he had the right demeanor. He was the right person for the time, like Jackie Robinson was. He certainly withstood an awful lot and did it with pride and dignity. And even to this day, when you mention Bill Russell's name, there's reverence for him everywhere.
And there should be.
Yeah.
You know, he attended the University of San Francisco. And, you know, he transcends, as far as I'm concerned, he transcends basketball. He's not just a basketball player. That's something that he did. No. Fascinating individual, though.
You know, Bill Russell, and I always remember those wars with Wilt Chamberlain. And Chamberlain, that was even a little bit before you. No, you were around at that point in time.
I was a youngster, yeah.
But Chamberlain outweighed him by 75 pounds and was maybe about 6 inches taller, 5 inches taller. But Russell was able to use what he had in many instances to outwit somebody who was bigger and stronger. So, certainly those principles that Bill Russell used in basketball could be used in life and to help one who is obviously not quite on the same par with others.
There's no doubt about it. You know, he didn't possess the physical attributes that Wilt did, as you said. Wilt was about 350.
Yeah.
7'2".
Yeah.
And
Russell was 6'9", I believe.
6'9", right. and a string bean.
Yeah, he was.
He knew that there was no way he was going to be able physically to take on Wilt. So he, without thinking, different angles on the court, positioning, try to beat Wilt to the spot. Had a great sense on the court awareness, they call it, to know where the ball's going to come off the rim for a rebound, depending on where the shooter was putting a jumper up from, and so he was able to position himself, not try to move Wilt out of the way, but he'd go to that spot where he felt the ball was going to come off, and most of the time it did. And, you know, he had to use his brain. I mean, much like we have to try to do today.
You know, I could see where that type of leadership you can use, obviously, as a leader yourself, where those principles certainly – could be used in any leadership position. It doesn't matter whether it's sheriff or wherever, when you're there to motivate others. I don't think there are very many people who can motivate people as well as Bill Russell. And he wasn't a very outspoken man. He was actually a pretty quiet man.
Very quiet.
Yeah.
Very quiet, reserved.
Well, that's not Sheriff Clark, though, is it?
Let his actions do the talking. No, there's different leadership styles.
That's right.
You know, you got to play to your strengths. And that's who he was. This is who I am. And there's no sense fighting it. You can't be something that you're not. So, you know, worked for him. And the jury's out, no pun intended, on whether it's working for me. But well, I'm confident in my ability. I'm confident in what I want to do, being in this position, where I want this organization to be, where I want it to go. And we're going to always move forward toward that finished product. Although I always say there's no finish line to excellence, and we're trying to be excellent.
Well, here the sheriff has a new goatee, and what brought that on? What brought that on? Where did that come from?
There's a number of things. Some is I had some time on my hand following the surgery to let it grow out and then groom it, and it gets to be work, though.
It is work. You see, mine is horrible. I don't know how you take the time out to groom it.
Well, that's probably why I may not have it long. Yeah. My wife's not real fond of it, and right now it's a battle of will. She says, I'm not going to kiss you until you shave it, so I said, well, honey, I'm going to miss your kisses. So
now, did you – the mustache wasn't there either, was it?
No. I used to have a mustache early in my young man days. I always had a mustache, but then I got rid of that. And I like the clean-shaven look. I really do. But I just thought I'd...
This wouldn't be the middle age crisis thing, would it?
Let's hope it's... I'll tell you what. If you see me pull up in a little red sports car convertible, then you'll know. But other than that... No, it's good to change up once in a while.
It is good to have you in the studio, though, Sheriff Clark.
Thank
it really
you.
Is. And this, Dorothy is calling early. We didn't open the lines for calling, but she's waiting. She has something to say to Sheriff Clark. So it's 3:13, and we're really early into this. Dorothy, do you have a question or comment for Sheriff David Clark?
Yes. You hear me?
Yes.
Yes, ma'am.
Absolutely.
Okay, I wish you had had some money betted on that, because you couldn't fool me. I knew my sheriff... voice when I hear it.
No.
So anyway, I just want to say hi. I was looking for him Juneteenth, but I think something was wrong. He went on that horse.
Yeah, I had detached retina. I had to have surgery. It's major surgery. It's serious ailment. And as a result, I was laid up for, it took me about 3 months, and they say 6 overall, but 3 months to get over the physical recovery of surgery, so I didn't have any business on a horse back in June. I had it near the end of May, so I was still in the early throes of post-operative recovery.
Glad you're doing okay.
Thank you, ma'am.
Dorothy. So you're one of the sheriff's biggest fans, huh?
Yes, I know his voice everywhere.
Oh, really?
Yes, I am.
Okay, and you're used to seeing him on the horse, right? Yeah, he looks regal on that horse, right?
I don't know. I camera. I'm going to take his picture, but he wasn't there.
Yeah.
Okay. Dorothy, I appreciate it. You're going to be the honorary chairwoman of the Sheriff Clark fan club, because I don't have a fan club, but we'll get one started with you.
You know, Sheriff, and thank you, Dorothy. So many things to talk about. I certainly spend a lot of time down at the lakefront. I've always told people that. I spend it. Inordinate amount of time at the lakefront, and it is as quiet and peaceful, and it has been ever since your initiative that you established, what is it, several years ago now?
Several years ago.
And there was a lot of, you know, gnashing of teeth, and there was some angry people based on some of the things that were going on the lakefront, and it is a testament to you that I spend a lot of time down there and many other people, and there's never any incidences that happen. Maybe I haven't seen them, I haven't heard of any, but that lakefront is pretty well crime-free.
Well, thank you. And, yes, incidents are down. But, you know, it's every day is a struggle, because you can always have some person come down there with bad intentions and perpetrate some act. But you're right. You know, we set out to, and I say we, I set the vision as to what I wanted the lakefront to be and to look like in terms of a peaceful public space. That's what it is. And it's what makes Milwaukee unique is its public spaces, unlike its suburban areas. And obviously the lakefront is, you know, one of the most visible symbols of the Milwaukee area. And through neglect and other reasons, there had been a deterioration of public safety, safety and security. And people, and that's what happens, they'll withdraw. When they don't feel safe anymore in an area, they will withdraw. And that allows the perpetrators of crime and disorder to move in and have free reign. And I said, I remember like it was yesterday, standing down at the lakefront at a news conference after a typically violent Memorial Day weekend in the Milwaukee area, but we also had some incidents of disorder down at the lakefront that Memorial Day weekend. I said we were going to reclaim this public space and give it back to the law-abiding people in the Milwaukee area, that this thing was meant for everybody, all people, not just a certain segment of this society, but all people to come down, have a good time without being intimidated and without having to put up with boorish behavior, drunkenness, foul language, and that kind of thing, fighting, weapons and drug dealing, and so on and so forth. And I said it would take some time, and it did. But we have our arms around it now. You're right. And thanks to that, life has returned to the
Well, but you know, and it's not just at Lake Park. There are parks throughout the entire city that are safe. And again, I'm a person who spends a lot of time in the parks. I don't think that people really realize how beautiful they are. And you know, you don't need to be stuck in your neighborhoods all the time. If you get outside of your neighborhoods and go to the parks, it's peaceful.
You know, I'm glad you brought that out, because it wasn't just about the lakefront. But although I said, you know, I prefaced that by saying it's the most visible
right
public space we have in this area. But it really was a lakefront and parks plan for the Milwaukee County Park System throughout Milwaukee County. We divided it up into segments and assigned people permanently, law enforcement officers, sheriff's deputies, to those parks. Again, to restore order, to bring back civility so that people could come to those parks free of intimidation. And you know, we had some other heinous acts. We had people who would be fishing on the bank of one of the lagoons, and they'd get robbed and,
yeah,
you know, get their stuff taken and harassed and so on and so forth. And, you know, there's still, from time to time, you'll read, we had an incident back in June in McGovern Park. Washington Park, yeah, around the swimming pool area. And that'll happen from time to time. But again, we immediately respond with effective tactics to change the dynamic and let the perpetrators of disorder realize that, nope, we're in charge. And supported by the park users and the residents of Milwaukee County. When I say we're in charge,
you know, there was also an incident at McGovern Park, the park that my youth football program uses, where some idiot decided it was great to pull out a pistol or something. And before he could do anything rash or foolish, he was set upon by the sheriffs. And so that's just great news. As many young people, you know, frequent that park and other parks, it's great to know that you can, you know, leave your young people at the parks and that they're safe, because there was a time when that didn't occur, not too long ago.
It's a quality of life issue. And you know, parks are in neighborhoods. Most of the county parks are surrounded by some neighborhood and they're utilized. And a park can take away from the quality of life of a neighborhood if it's inundated with unruly people and it's used as a hangout and it's used for activities that it wasn't designed to be used for, and they can take away from the quality of life in a neighborhood, as I said, or it can be the jewel of a neighborhood, and we want it to be the jewel of the neighborhood. We want people to use it. It's convenient. That's the neat thing about parks. They're convenient. You know, walk down the street. You don't have to go too far in any neighborhood in the Milwaukee area, and you'll be able to find a park, even if you want to just kick back, sit on a park bench, relax.
You know, and if nothing else, I don't think people realize how many crimes are prevented just by having the sheriffs there. I mean, the deputies there. They're visible. And so I know that you had to pull them away from other areas, so you certainly didn't get a whole lot of additional deputies when you made this decision. So where did you pull them from?
Not at all. We don't get any. We're in a day and age.
From what I hear, you don't have enough.
It's one way. It's take of the resources. But, you know, you have to get it done. And what we did when I came in, become the sheriff of this great county, one of the visions I had is I wanted to be a flexible organization where we could respond to changing dynamics, because society changes every day. It changes every minute of every day, and they don't leave time. Society doesn't often leave time for us to readjust. So we have to either change with them or try to stay ahead, a step ahead, and anticipate some of these changes. And so we've built a flexible organization where we can move people around. You ask, where I got them from. First of all, if you're more efficient with the resources, you'd be surprised how many resources I'm actually given, which is why you don't hear me lament and whine about not having enough people. You've never heard me say that I was short-staffed.
Well, no, you were returning dollars at the end of the fiscal year for a number of years. So it's pretty obvious that you have always made do with less than what your predecessors had.
Well, you have to. It's other people's money. It's your money. It's the property taxpayers of Milwaukee County. It's their money, and I have to be as efficient with it as I can.
But now that philosophy can be polarizing to some. You know, I mean, you're aware of that
internally.
Yeah.
Sure. And that's that inward mindset that I've often talked about, and that's a fight we have every day, internal dissension. You have to fight that as well. That's one of those resistance forces that anytime you mention or try to implement any change, and I've been an agent of change, I love change because the world changes. And so you can love it or hate it, and I'll tell you what, if you hate it, it's the worst thing you have to go through.
You certainly.
But life's too short, so I say change with it, change with the world, change with the times, change with the people, and embrace it.
You know, there are those who will say, and certainly I'm glad you're in, and we're going to take some time to go over some things this afternoon, but there are those who will say that you're pretty ambitious with your change, process of changing, and that maybe sometimes you reach out into areas that the sheriff probably shouldn't be reaching out into. And so we'll spend a little time delving into those kind of areas. I know Sheriff Clark is one thing for sure that I've always said about you. You're straight up. You certainly don't duck and hide. Whatever it is, you say, you back it up. And so you got to respect a person for that.
Well, I appreciate it.
And then the last thing before we go to break is you make it clear that you're not a politician. But there are many who will say he's a consummate politician.
Well,
what would be your response to that?
There are many people who say a lot of things about me, and I don't really pay any attention to it. I've been a cop I'm in my 31st year, by the way, July 24th, 1978. So this past July, several weeks ago, 3 weeks ago, I believe, 30 years complete of being a public servant, a cop first. I happen to be in a political position. I don't deny that. But I'm a cop at heart. Public safety is my thing, keeping this community safe, being part of the debate and discussion as to how to get that done. That's what I'm in this thing for, and it happens to be an elected position. There's some political aspects to it. I'll tell you.
We're going to have you answer that on the other side because we got to go to break. Because I do want to ask you, with all the money that's going to be flowing in, from Barack Obama's stimulus project. I don't know how much of any is going to wind up with the Sheriff's Department, but certainly we'll let you respond on the other side. We've got a few minutes with the Barack Obama radio address. Monday, as always, Barack Obama's radio address. That'll be for a few minutes. And when we come back, Sheriff David Clark is in studio. And our phone lines are open at 799-1290. You, too, can join in the conversation. And guess who's going to follow you? Mayor Tom Barrett, man.
Okay.
I mean, I don't think I could have got a better coup anywhere. Sheriff Clark, followed by Mayor Tom Barrett at 5 o'clock. Stay tuned. We'll be right back. It's 3:26. You're listening to 1290 WMCS, Talk of the Town.
The Hunger Task Force and Harley-Davidson Motor Company have teamed up again to provide summer meals for Milwaukee-area children and families. Call 211 for the closest site to you. That's 211. In Urban Day School, they're fully accredited K-4 through 8th grade. They also have Head Start from age 3. To enroll, call Urban Day at 987-8400. That's 987-8400 for Urban Day.
In June, and far fewer than the nearly 700,000 a month we were losing at the beginning of the year. Of course, this is little comfort to anyone who saw their job disappear in July, and to the millions of Americans who are looking for work. And I will not rest until anyone who's looking for work can find a job. Still, this month's job numbers are a sign that we've begun to put the brakes on this recession and that the worst may be behind us. But we must do more than rescue our economy from this immediate crisis. We must rebuild it stronger than before. We must lay a new foundation for future growth and prosperity. And a key pillar of a new foundation is health insurance reform. Reform that we are now closer to achieving than ever before. There are still details to be hammered out. There are still differences to be reconciled. But we are moving toward a broad consensus on reform. Four committees in Congress have produced legislation, an unprecedented level of agreement on a difficult and complex challenge. In addition to the ongoing work in Congress, providers have agreed to bring down costs. Drug companies have agreed to make prescription drugs more affordable for seniors. The AARP supports reform because of the better care it will offer to seniors. And the American Nurses Association and the American Medical Association, which represent the millions of nurses and doctors who know our healthcare system best, all support reform as well. As we draw close to finalizing and passing real health insurance reform, the defenders of the status quo and political point scores in Washington are growing fiercer in their opposition. In recent days and weeks, some have been using misleading information to defeat what they know is the best chance of reform we have ever had. And that's why it's important, especially now, as senators and representatives head home and meet with their constituents, for you, the American people, to have all the facts. So let me explain what reform will mean for you. And let me start by dispelling the outlandish rumors that reform will promote euthanasia, or cut Medicaid, or bring about a government takeover of healthcare. That's simply not true. This isn't about putting government in charge of your health insurance. It's about putting you in charge of your health insurance. Under the reforms we seek, if you like your doctor, you can keep your doctor. If you like your health care plan, you can keep your health care plan. And while reform is obviously essential for the 46 million Americans who don't have health insurance, it will also provide more stability and security to the hundreds of millions who do. Right now, we have a system that works well for the insurance industry, but that doesn't always work well for you. What we need and what we will have when we pass health insurance reform are consumer protections to make sure that those who have insurance are treated fairly and that insurance companies are held accountable. We'll require insurance companies to cover routine checkups and preventive care, like mammograms and colonoscopies, or eye and foot exams for diabetics, so we can avoid chronic illnesses that cost too many lives and too much money. We'll stop insurance companies from denying coverage because of a person's medical history. I'll never forget watching my own mother as she fought cancer in her final days, worrying about whether her insurer would claim her illness was a pre-existing condition. I've met so many Americans who worry about the same thing. And that's why, under these reforms, insurance companies will no longer be able to deny coverage because of a previous illness or injury. And insurance companies will no longer be allowed to drop or water down coverage for someone who has become seriously ill. Your health insurance ought to be there for you when it counts, and reform will make sure it is. With reform, insurance companies will also have to limit how much you can be charged for out-of-pocket expenses, and will stop insurance companies from placing arbitrary caps on the amount of coverage you can receive in a given year or a lifetime, because no one in America should go broke because of an illness. In the end, the debate about health insurance reform boils down to a choice between two approaches. The first is almost guaranteed to double health care costs over the next decade, leave millions more Americans without insurance, leave those with insurance vulnerable to arbitrary denials of coverage, and bankrupt state and federal governments. That's the status quo. That's the healthcare system we have right now. So we can either continue this approach, or we can choose another one, one that will protect people against unfair insurance practices, provide quality, affordable insurance to every American, and bring down rising costs that are swamping families, businesses, and our budgets. That's the healthcare system we can bring about with reform. There are those who are focused on the so-called politics of healthcare, who are trying to exploit differences or concerns for political gain. And that's to be expected. That's Washington. But let's never forget that this isn't about politics. This is about people's lives. This is about people's businesses. This is about America's future. That's what's at stake. And that's why health insurance reform is so important. That's why we have to get this done, and why we will get this done by the end of this year. Thanks so much.
President Obama's weekly address was being brought to you by Family Pharmacy. They're located at 3512 North Oakland Avenue. For more information, call them. They're at 414-332-9300 and help them help you.
Caring for your diabetes can be a difficult task, but there are people here to help. Family Pharmacy.
Celebrating 30 years of broadcast excellence. The Evening Rush on 1290 WMCS, the talk of the town.
Welcome back, Milwaukee. It's 3:45 and the Barack Obama address has ended, and we'll certainly talk about Barack Obama on Tuesday. But right now, it's the one and only Sheriff David Clark and what would I call these young ladies here along
staff
with you?
Support.
Staff support. Miss Kim Brooks, how you doing?
Here,
why don't you try the microphone?
Nice to be here as always.
How are the babies?
They're great, thank you.
How are they now?
4 and 18 months.
4 and 18 months.
And you are, your title?
I'm the Public Information Officer, Community Relations Manager.
Okay, and you've been around
Honored
for...
Honored to be.
You've been around for a long time. You've been
Sheriff, can you believe it's been 5 years?
Yeah,
I he's got that question mark look on his face, right?
Yeah, every day I'm reminded. Every day you do something to remind me.
And Miss Aisha Barkle, and she is a captain.
Yes, that's correct.
There's a microphone for you. Okay.
Hello.
Hi, how are you?
I'm happy to be here.
It's good to have you here.
Always a pleasure.
Yeah, and you know, I mean, to serve under the sheriff must be pretty good too, huh?
It is.
Tell the truth.
It is.
To hear him talk about it, every once in a while, I come around the corner and I hear him whispering, and I stand there and listen.
All right, Sheriff, let's talk about what's going on at the House of Correction. 6 months ago. 8 months ago, 10 months ago, it was in disarray. We were reading articles almost every other day in the paper stating that it was out of control. Actually, last year or the year before, they were talking about I don't know how many millions of overtime, and it appeared that the guy who was running it before you said there's no way this thing could be run without the overtime. And when you mentioned somehow taking over, obviously the smoke signals went up again, and there goes Sheriff Clark again. well, 6 months later, let's talk about what is obviously arousing success story at the House of Correction. I mean, nobody can argue that now. You have obviously been able to turn around the House of Correction, and all of that overtime budget has now been erased. How were you able to do that? Let's talk a little bit about that.
Well, you know, we're off to a good start. That's the way I look at it. Success, I think, is down the road. But it's important to get off to a good start. When the county board and along with the county executive made a decision to change the way we do corrections in Milwaukee County, they asked me to take on that role. And I love to fix things that are broken. And as I indicated earlier, I'm an agent of change. And I got in there, rolled up my sleeves, and was looking forward to this because it was in need of fixing. There was a National Institute of Corrections assessment that was done back in 2008, I believe. And that is a unit out of the Department of Justice. And they came in to do an assessment and issued a scathing report on the condition of the facility that we now call Milwaukee County Correctional Facility South, CCF South, more commonly referred to and known as the House of Correction. I use that as the blueprint for the change that was necessary. They made a list of recommendations of what they felt needed to be done to turn this agency around, this organization around, and make it one that would better serve not only the needs, but better serve the people of Milwaukee County for the role that they play in this thing. And it's post-adjudication facility. So once you're sentenced for what's really supposed to be misdemeanors and maybe some lower-level felonies, lower-level has turned in now to a pseudo, almost like a medium security prison. And it's not, it wasn't built for that. It wasn't, the physical structure wasn't as such. People aren't trained for that. And they don't have the mechanisms in place to deal with the type of population that a medium security prison facility would hold. But that's what many judges are turning this thing into, with the type of people they're sentencing out there. So I appointed a transition team, and it starts, everything with me starts with accountability. Somebody has to be accountable. Somebody, not, people don't know, it's a gray area, people are pointing at each other, well, you know, in charge, it doesn't work. There has to be somebody in charge, and that person was Inspector Richard Schmidt, who was the head of my county jail facility, so he's well-versed in confinement facility. So he put together a transition team, and they put together a plan to turn this thing around. And I said, you know, as the head of the organization, you set the vision and you can set the direction. You have to count on the people you surround yourself with to actually get it done. That's where the rubber meets the road, the people doing it every day. People on the front lines, middle management, are particularly important. And we had an opportunity to get some of the right people on the bus. It's a concept from Jim Collins, who is an author on business models. Good to Great is a book that he wrote, and also he followed that up with Good to Great in the public sector, the social sector, and Good to Great in policing. And it's the steps, these steps, I should say, of how to get an organization that's floundering, how to get it to the good level, and then how to get it from good to great. And we study that, my command staff. We talk about it often. It was required reading. We've had people give, within the command staff at cabinet meetings, give presentations on certain sections of it, because I want to make sure they have a full understanding of what it is, because that's what we're trying to get to. We want to be a great organization. I think we're good now, but, you know, as Bill Parcells, football coach now with actually GM of the Miami Dolphins, but formerly with the Dallas Cowboys, the New York Giants, New York Jets, and New England Patriots, said to one of his players one time, never let good enough be good enough.
But, you know, it certainly wasn't as easy as you make it out to be, because from what I understand, the House of Correction, there are pods. and you can have as many as 60, maybe 50 or 60 men in a pod. And unlike the jail, they're all in one area, one secured area. And how many people are in charge of watching over those 50 to 60 people? We got to go to a break first. And then I certainly love to give you a chance to respond to that, because I was fortunate enough one time to walk through the House of Correction. and it was during the voting. We were going to help register, have people register to vote. And the first thing that I noticed was all of these people just locked up. And I couldn't get that out of my mind. All these young people, and they're just wasting away.
Times of their lives.
Right. And so, and that's when I got to see this thing for myself. And those of you who've never seen it, it is kind of amazing to see that that can be controlled by what, one or two people at a time, these pods?
The dorm areas.
Yeah,
yes.
Dormitories or whatever they call it.
Right.
All right, we got to go to a break. When we come back, in studio with me is Sheriff David Clark. Tony, we'll be right back. It's 3:54. You're listening to 1290 WMCS, the Talk of the Town.
This portion of the Evening Rush is being brought to you by Wendy's, and it's way better than fast food. It's Wendy's. And make sure you log on to our new and improved website. That's 1290WMCS.com. Join our VIP club, fill out the quick and easy form, and stop by our studios on Sherman and Capitol to pick up your card. Then use your card to get 10% off products and services at our VIP partner businesses. That's the new and improved 1290 website at 1290WMCS.com for all the details.